Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Pressure Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Pressure Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. Thank you as always for listening to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports, and this week also by the great guys at Wealthfront. We'll talk a little bit more about them later. This week's episode is basically about rumors, facts, and innuendo. It's a basically three-part episode. We've got the audio from the Press Row Hangout that we had on Sunday night, where we talked about a whole bunch of stuff, including some rumors about football games, some innuendo about some golf games, and then just some other, you know, topics that we wanted to talk about in the weeks before MLB the Show becomes sort of the main discussion item for a few weeks. And of course, then what happens is a whole bunch of actual news or actual events happen during the course of the week. So in addition to the audio from the Hangout, then I get together with Owen Good to talk about the actual news that came out about the PGA Tour golf game from EA. So that's an interesting conversation. And then Brian and TJ and I from the Hangout get back together to talk about what little bit of real information came out about the Joe Montana football game. So it's sort of taking you from the beginning of the week to the end of the week in a typical week in the sports video game cycle, where sometimes you don't know anything and then you find stuff out in the reaction. So it's fun, three-parter, good stuff. And again, thank you as always for listening to the Press Row Podcast. We really appreciate it. Hope you enjoy the show and hope you have a great week. All right, all right, all right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the season opener Press Row Hangout. We are finally getting to the beginning of the sports video game season, only 2 weeks away from the first major launch of the year. Very exciting times, and a great time to sort of take a look at a whole bunch of different topics that have come up over the last few months, sort of discuss them, clear our plate so that we can focus a lot on MLB the Show in upcoming weeks. A lot of good stuff to talk about tonight. I'm very excited. Joining me, as always, from the great state of Washington, from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Wiedei. Brian, how are you, sir? Welcome.
Yeah, it's exciting to be back, and I want to thank anybody who's watching live for DVRing The Walking Dead or The Jinx or whatever, or Last Man on Earth, whatever great show is on that you normally watch on a Sunday night that you're not watching at the moment. Thank you. We're happy to have you back.
Absolutely. And from the even greater state of New Jersey, from that sports gamer, Mr. TJ Larriman. TJ, welcome.
Finally, that sports gamer has come back to the Press Row Hangout. What's going on, Rich and Brian? How are you guys doing? Jinx, I think he got arrested today. So
yeah, that was interesting timing on all that it happened on the same day of the finale. So yeah, curious, because they left it on kind of a cliffhanger last week on something they found. It's interesting.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I had not heard of this in show at all until today, when the New York Times reported that he admitted the killings on the show live and has been arrested. I'm like, who are these people talking about? I have no idea.
Did he really?
To me, yes, he did. To me, it's much more fascinating that the leader of Russia has been missing for like 11 days now, and nobody's really talking about that. To me, that's a much, much more concern. But hey, Who am I to judge how the modern news media decides what's important and what's not?
Yeah, I heard Durst did it all for the nookie.
Well, I'm telling you right now, when I heard that Durst, you know, and murder were put together in a headline, that's immediately what I thought. I was like, oh, that Limp Bizkit guy finally lost it and went nuts.
Hey, man, he's not got kidding. That sweet new era hat deal, so.
All right, so we are here, as I said, talk about a lot of good stuff. A bunch of listeners have sent things our way and you know, comments and topics, and so we're going to hit a whole bunch of stuff tonight. We're going to start, first of all, TJ, with something that came up at last week's PAX East panel, something that has been causing quite a bit of controversy in the Ultimate Team world. Break it down for us, TJ. What is the deal with the changes that EA has made to Ultimate Team? Because they have caused a lot of conversation, some people to be happy, some people to be upset. What's the deal over there?
Well, I think the big thing is the FIFA Ultimate Team allows you to do a bunch of transactions on the computer. So one of the things a lot of people have done is like tap into that system so that they can put cards up on the block, buy cards and stuff. And that led to like a whole shady underbelly of selling coins for money so that people could go onto the shadiest of websites and give them their credit card information and hope that works out well. And just buy coins to buy cards because they didn't feel like the packs were good enough and they couldn't get enough coin to buy the really good players and stuff. So one of the things that EA did a couple of weeks ago was they turned off the web app and the mobile app. And now they've come through and said they're pretty much leaving those off. And now when you put up players, there's already going to be set like ranges for each card's price range, which, I mean, kind of makes sense because a lot of people were breaking terms of service going through, doing all this crazy, shady stuff and getting their accounts banned. And a lot of people were getting screwed over. And I think the biggest thing, like the biggest backlash now is it looks like they took the average selling price of cards from all the consoles, because I think there's a PS3, PS4 market, a PC market, and an Xbox One, Xbox 360 market. And it looks like they just took the average price of all those markets overall. So I think it's PS3 normally has the higher prices because there's more people playing on 360 and Xbox. So pretty much if you got a good deal on PS3, those cards dropped in value a ton the next day when they put in all this stuff and screwed over a lot of people that way too.
So I'm still a little iffy on what the actual problem is. The problem that people want more coins than they can get? I mean, what is the core issue that's causing all of this, the activity that then had to be clamped down upon?
Yeah, I think it's just people hacking in through the website to go in and put up a ton of cards for sale that'll sell real quick so they can make a lot of coins and then sell that for money.
Okay. Well, and there's, I think, the issue of inflation, right? Most of the really good cards have risen to a point where normal people can't obtain them, right?
And that's so partially because of this, is all those coin buyers are making people go out and spend $100 on 2 million coins, and then they can go out and buy these cards, and their prices just keep continuing to go up.
Yeah, so the idea is people would go, I guess, to like eBay, right, or some various websites, like you said. And then they would buy coins, and then they would go and list some cheap throwaway card, and the person they bought the coins from would buy it for some insane amount, and that's how the transfer took place. And so now by setting these price ranges, they eliminate that.
That's how that works, because I bet a large percentage of the time people would go in, put their PayPal account in, transfer $200, and then have literally nothing. So
well, certainly, and then the people who are – you know, they don't trust EA necessarily, just see this as another way to force people into buying more packs. So instead, the money that they would have spent on coins somewhere else, they're having to churn through more packs to get the cards they want, or they're going to have to play more and collect a lot more coins to get it. I don't know. You know, it seems to have upset not just obviously the people who were making money off these schemes, but it seems to have upset the people, just the general people who are playing. And I don't know if they really think these changes are for the best for them either.
Yeah, I was really surprised that they kind of did it at the end of this year and not just started fresh next year with it. But
well, because these are live services, right? I mean, they kind of, you know, one of the things I've sort of learned over the last couple of years is when EA uses the term live service, it really is, even though it's connected to a specific game, it really is its own separate organization, basically, managing these things. So they have a lot more flexibility with live services versus the core game itself. And I'm obviously purely hypothesizing, but it seems to me like they made the decision to go ahead and do it now so that they could really see if it would have the kind of impact that they're looking at. And they don't have to wait until next year's game to see if this will work or not. I mean, again, purely hypothesizing, but you know, this Ultimate Team, particularly in FIFA, has a long and troubled history with things like hacks or things like, you know, people stealing money, you know, at the most nefarious levels, as well as even at lower levels, all sorts of shenanigans related to auction houses and things like that. Yeah. So this feels like another one of those things that we thought was sort of in the past, but clearly is not, Brian.
Yeah, it was back in FIFA 12 especially, there was a lot of phishing going on with people losing their accounts and getting locked down in the I think it was mostly Xbox 360.
And I think even wasn't the FIFA hacking stuff like kind of the stuff that led to the PlayStation Network going down for that month a couple years ago?
I don't remember that.
That was one of the main things that we were doing.
Yeah, so and also if you follow like the FIFA Twitter account or Facebook, all you get every reply is like click this link to get your free pack or your free player or whatever, all these scam again to try and steal your account because they want you to log in on a fake website with your actual credentials and then they can go in and steal your account. So there's so much. Anytime money is involved, people are going to find a way around the system, a way to cheat the system, a way to steal. And that just naturally is going to come with these modes that these companies are relying on more. And they have to figure out a way to protect people better because not everyone knows how to protect themselves.
TJ, are you playing FIFA Ultimate Team these days?
It's funny. I actually turned on FIFA a couple days ago and realized I had barely played any Ultimate Team this year. My team is atrocious, and I still have some of like the trial players from when you start Ultimate Team. So I have not, but I've started a career, which is the first time I've done one of those in like 3 years.
You know, it's just one of those things that, again, as we've talked about almost ad nauseum, you know, as the Ultimate Team revenue padding, you know, microtransaction-driven modes continue to permeate every sports experience. These are the kind of things that concern you. You know, and I just think of like, you know, not even necessarily, you know, the 20 or the 30 or the 40-year-old guy who's, you know, just actually has plenty of disposable income and doesn't mind dropping $100 to go get a bunch of great cards and things like that. But I also think of like, you know, my son's too young, but when he gets to be a few years older, you know, if he's doing this kind of stuff, those guys, you know, those are some of the really, you know, because he's not going to have his own account or his own stuff, you know, he would be rife for pilfering as well. I mean, this stuff really gets ugly the more you look into it. And I guess, you know, again, I'm clearly not an authority in this stuff, but I guess, is it right to say kudos to EA for trying to eliminate this now, or is EA really probably to blame for this being a problem in the first place? TJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on for years, and at least now they're finally doing something about it, but it's been a problem for a while. But as you said, you know, you might want to go and drop $100 in FIFA points and open packs. You might not get anything, but you can go to one of these sites, drop $100, maybe get, I don't know what the exchange rate is, it might be 1 million or 2 million coins, and you can go pick out the players that you want, which, I mean, that's a better deal, kind of, if you're willing to go that way and risk getting your account banned and everything.
You would actually think that would be a, what EA would prefer is people having a positive experience. Like, so there, you know, I've seen streamers who open packs on their streams and stuff, and they go through hundreds of dollars and they don't get anything good and they get upset or whatever. It's like, that's, you know, that's a short-term gain for EA. They're bringing in that money right now, but is that really the positive experience that keeps people coming back? I don't know. And like TJ, you're the Ultimate Team guy, and it seems like certain things have been wearing on you. And I would think that would be one if you spent that much money and you didn't get something back that you actually enjoyed and felt like you got value out of. When you're just scrapping half of the stuff you end up paying money for, I think that, you know, I'm not sure if that's a real good long-term strategy for these modes, but they keep growing, so maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, whatever we think is obviously wrong because they just keep making money every hand over fist every year. So, but hopefully this makes it a little safer. I think that's one of the main reasons you don't see mobile apps for any of the other Ultimate Team games that you can spend money in. Because I know on the FIFA app you used to be able to buy the points, but I could be wrong. I think you had to buy the points on the console, then you could spend them on the mobile app. But none of the other games, I don't think, have trade blocks or anything like that. But you know, FIFA is the one that makes all the money, so that's where they're going to try to fix everything first.
Yeah, you know, and if I'm EA, I want to protect it as much as possible. If I'm EA, I don't want anybody to be able to profit off of my system except for me. And I don't mean that in a, you know, in some sort of corporate greed way. I just mean literally, if I've built this infrastructure and I've designed this system and I've, you know, put the parameters in place for how revenue is generated, I don't want outside influences who had nothing to do with the creation of this to then profit off of that. So I'm surprised that there are outside ways to still do this. But again, I guess, you know, with the, you know, even as we mentioned in the PAX East panel last week, when you take all of these different systems, right, you've got the FIFA system, then you got Ultimate Team, then you got real money, then you got social media, and you've got the ability to you know, have different people have accounts, and then these accounts. I mean, there is a lot of stuff at work to make this whole thing happen. I guess it's like you said, TJ, no matter what they do, people are going to devise ways to extract money out of it. But boy, you know, the more insular that EA can make this, I'm sure the better off that they'll be, whether anybody else will be better off or not. But I'm telling you, if I'm EA, I don't want anybody making money off of this mode except for EA. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right, but you got to think maybe they were turning a blind eye to it the last couple of years as the game kept getting more,
sure,
more fans watching people opening packs and getting good cards and playing more FIFA. You know, those people get more excited to play FIFA and spend more money. So
sure, but, all right. No, I totally get that, and that's where it comes in to where, okay, we don't truly understand how the money is made. I mean, we know people spend money to get the coins to buy the packs, but yeah, what truly keeps those people coming in and coming back and stuff is something that we still don't have the insight to. We just know that every year the numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger. And at some point they'll stop getting bigger, but they haven't stopped. And EA continues to say there's still a lot of room for growth in that mode. Well, all right, let's move on to another topic we get asked about, PGA Tour Golf. Looks like there might be life on the PGA Tour Golf social media. Did I see something this week, Brian Weedye?
Yeah, you did. And, you know, I had just been thinking about this the last couple of weeks that it's one thing for EA to announce a game and then you not hear about it for a while. But the last time we heard about PGA Tour, anything about PGA Tour from EA, other than the delay of it from a financial call, was E3 last year. And this is normally the time of year right before the Masters now. It used to be like mid-March and then it became early April. When the Tiger Woods games, it's no longer Tiger Woods, but that's when the Tiger Woods games would fall. So we're right in that period where it would generally be almost to release or right at release. And we have not heard a word from EA other than that it's delayed sometime into the next quarter. Likely looks like it's going to be June. I've speculated over the months. I thought it was interesting that they went silent. And not only just they didn't have a press release for it or anything, but there was their Facebook page for PGA Tour had no posts from like October 3rd, not even about just golf, nothing from October 3rd on until just the other day. And the Twitter account, you know, it was tweeting out some golf related stuff, but nothing game related. So I really thought it was interesting that it's gone that long without anything, especially given the time of year that we're at. And despite the delay and everything, that there's still a few months, it seems, for them to promote it. It just tells me that maybe something changed along the way, because it was not a good reception the game got at E3 last year. I don't know if they maybe tinkered with things with their strategy afterwards, or if there was an issue in development, because this is the first game, the first golf game for them on the new systems, and it's only coming on the new systems, and it's without Tiger Woods at presence at all, not just the name. He's not in the game at all. And they started with this whole fantasy course thing to try and attract people that maybe were just drawn by the name in the past. So there's a lot of stuff going on with the game. It seems like it's been disrupted in some way, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I'm just fascinated with that it just kind of dropped off the map for 9 months.
You know, my attitude with a lot of these things is I'm whenever they're ready, I'm ready, but I'm totally cool until they're not ready too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not chomping at the bit for a new PGA Tour golf game, but if they're like, hey, it's coming out next week, we're like, all right, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine the amount of time and effort that it goes to build legitimate PGA courses with the next generation art assets and having just to create those courses and the characters, right? Because we know – let's face it, some of those characters on the previous generation consoles look pretty bad, right? So I'm sure they want to make them look good. They got to do the face scan. They got to get each of the different swings right. Not to mention physics and stuff. I mean, I would assume that they're building a lot of this stuff from scratch and that there's a whole lot of work that goes into it. So I'm not surprised that we haven't heard much. I'm not surprised that it is delayed, and I put delayed in air quotes because, I mean, if you never really announce a date, it's not truly delayed. From my perspective, I'm looking at from EA, from sports, I mean, my God, they've had nothing come out. Like, I want to reduce my risk and maximize the amount of dollars that are going to be spent on my game. And if this game is coming out in June or July and Madden comes out in August and NHL in September and FIFA in September and NBA Live in October, I mean, that's like putting all your games in like a 3 or 4 month window. I mean,
that's why we need a subscription, right? That's all. If they're going to do that.
We need some sort of access to all these games.
Electronic Arts need to consider an access to their games, yes.
You know, and as we've said, golf does not lend itself to an annual release nearly as well as any other sports game does. I mean, I'm almost of the attitude like, hey, take another year. I'm fine with that personally as a consumer. Again, not from a business perspective. I'm like, take another year and release it next March when all we got is baseball from a sports game perspective, baseball and golf. I'm cool with that. I would have no problem with that. TJ, I'm sure that's probably a disastrous idea in about 10 different ways. But as a, from a consumer perspective, by the way, when I can play golf anytime I want to with my friends right now. So, again, it's not like I can't do it. TJ, is that crazy or what do you think?
Before last year in NHL, I would have said you're crazy. But now that we've had NHL come out with half the stuff in it that was in the year before, I'd be willing to let them take another year to keep going. But if you've been following the at EA Sports Golf feed on Twitter, it kind of looks like they're getting ready to do some stuff.
Yeah, it does.
Because 3 days ago they said, let's get the ball rolling, and there was a golf ball rolling over the EA Sports logo.
By the way, were you sure that's a golf ball?
It's a blue ball, so maybe they're ready to burst.
I saw people say that's an egg. Which would imply something happening around Easter, maybe.
Well, and also 2 days ago there was a PGA Tour 2 Flashback Friday, and then I guess yesterday there was another one that said, "Before we move forward, let's do one more. Let's go back. Let's throw it back one more time." So, hopefully by Thursday we'll hear something before they have another Throwback Thursday.
Well, right, and that's my point. Like, if they're ready and they're just like, "Hey, it's coming in a few weeks," I'm all for that. Let's go. Let's do it.
Are you saying this is okay for them to wait, Rich? I wonder because of the golf club.
Well, the golf club. You guys know I love that game. I can play golf whenever I want to right now. So it's not like NHL where I could not get any sort of hockey experience on my PlayStation 4 or my Xbox One. I can play golf right now. Yeah, it ain't PGA Tour golf, but it's golf, and it's a solid game. So,
do you think that's trouble? Do you think that's trouble for EA that as the golf purists who bought the golf club, that they don't really feel the need for a golf game?
Of course it is. Yeah. I mean,
I think that's probably a concern of theirs.
Just like I don't want any competition in any business, right? I mean, as a consumer, you want competition. As a video game maker, it's better to not have competition. And when I say competition, I mean every game has competition from not just a direct competitor in that sport, but other sports games, other non-sports games, movies, television. Like, there's always competition. But at the bottom line is, yeah, if I'm EA, I'm not happy that somebody's making a golf game. Or if I'm EA, I want that golf game to bomb, right? But I don't know how the golf club has done from a financial perspective, but I know that I like it and a bunch of my friends like it, and we play it regularly, and they keep adding to it and making different new features available, and now tours and careers. And, yeah, like I said, if they come out with it in the next month, I will buy it happily and check it out. But if it doesn't come out for another year, I'm not freaking out or even the least bit concern. I'm like, okay, when it's ready, it's ready. Because, TJ, it's a great point. With NHL, it wasn't ready. So There's plenty of stuff for me to play in the meantime. PGA Tour can come out next week or next year. Either way, I'm good. As long as it's a good game, I'm in. But I'm not like clamoring, oh, I need it now. Not at all.
And stepping away from the Sim Golf, one of our favorite games from the Vita, it looks like Hot Shots Golf is going to come out this year on the PS4. So we'll have even more golf to play, Rich.
And that is a really interesting experience. I liked Hot Shots on the Vita. Didn't love it. But I didn't love it because there was some stuff I just didn't understand about the best way to level up the character. It took way too long just to get to like the next basic step. But yeah, I mean, Hot Shots is a long beloved franchise on the Sony platform. So I'm kind of surprised that that has not already existed. So that's something else that would be good to check out. You know, and the Xbox also has that golf game that came out at launch too. So, you know, there's a lot of different golfing experiences you can have right now, or it sounds like you will be able to have. And yeah, that would be concerning for PGA. But on the other hand, none of them are licensed PGA Tour games with licensed PGA Tour players. And we all know that people like to play the real courses and the real guys. And so that is, you know, the feather in their cap that they have that nobody else has.
Yeah, especially after today when the, what was it, Valspar Championship went to three playoff
holes with
three guys.
The paint I bought.
Yeah.
I know Valspar, okay.
Yeah, went to three playoff holes with three guys, and the guy hit a 30-foot birdie to win. It's pretty nice. Then I was like, let me go play with this guy, but can't do that.
Can't do that.
Well, all right, we're going to take a minute and talk about Wealthfront. The Press Row podcast is supported by Wealthfront, which is the automated investment service that makes it easy to invest your money the right way. Wealthfront software manages your money using investment strategies that were previously only available to the wealthiest investors for just one quarter the cost of using a traditional advisor. So this is a big deal. You can really take advantage of services that have really never been available before to people like us, just regular Joes. Wealthfront monitors your account 24/7, automatically rebalancing your portfolio, reinvesting dividends, and working to maximize your after-tax returns. Wealthfront is also overseen by a team of investment experts, the same experts who launched the index fund revolution and who've written some of the most important books in finance. And in case you're still not convinced, you should know that Wealthfront manages over $2 billion, with a B, dollars in client assets and has saved millions of dollars on taxes for its clients. So with Wealthfront watching over your investments every day, what will you do with all your extra time? Visit Wealthfront.com/press to get your first $10,000 managed for free. Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure.
All right, moving on. Something else a little out of the blue or out of left field. Forza Horizon 2. I'm not sure if either of you guys have this game, but they recently announced that there will be a free expansion based upon the latest in the Fast and the Furious films. Brian, you're an Xbox One owner. Do you have Forza Horizon 2? And if so, are you looking forward to this?
I bought it, but I don't have it anymore, but that doesn't matter. The great thing about this Furious 7 tie-in is it's free. You don't even need the game. Now, TJ... Yeah, see, that's the best part, right? You don't need the game, and you still get it for free. TJ doesn't have the console, so...
So I will just watch Furious 7, because that's going to be a great movie.
Yeah, but you won't have the game where you're racing with the cars from Furious 7.
Yeah, but...
And I want to... I doubt it happens, but I really want to drive out of an airplane.
That definitely sounds like a good time. So,
but yeah, Forza Horizon is based off the engine, right? So it's basically Forza, you know, just a chunk of Forza Horizon 2 themed to Furious 7 to tie in with the movie release, which happens. This comes out on March 27th. The movie is, I don't know, April 3rd, something like that. So, yeah, and they're giving it away. So I'm excited for that because, Forza Horizon 2 is a fantastic racing game.
Yes.
It's probably the best, you know, best racing game on the new systems. I don't know. You might disagree. You were the one who liked or disliked Drive Club, or did you like it?
I don't really like Drive Club. Yeah. I've tried it even after a lot of it got fixed. You know, we all know the story. It came out completely broken in most ways. You know, it took a couple of months to get to where all the social stuff would work. I know people who love it. and who play it regularly. I get friend updates because, like, there's certain kinds of competitions that you can be in, and if you beat our top leaderboard, your friends will get notifications. It looks amazing. It just, for me, just didn't ever really grab me, and I still have it, and I've been kind of wondering why I have it, because I really haven't played it for a while, and I think what really ended it for me was, even before everything had been completely fixed, they gave you some stuff for free, but then they also started charging for some DLC and some cars. I'm just like, you know, it's just, I don't know. Again, it looks, it is, I can't think of a better looking game on the PlayStation 4. It really does look amazing. The cars are beautiful. They're really distinctive. The tracks are fantastic, but I don't know. It just, it, I gave it a bunch of tries, and it never truly grabbed me. Forza Horizon 2, I thought, was much more fun. Very, very easy to get in and play. There are some challenging parts, but at no point did I ever feel as frustrated as I have in Drive Club 2 with the level of difficulty. I'll be curious to see it. I mean, it's a timed window, right? Like, it's not free for everybody forever.
2 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks you can download it for free, and then you get to keep it. So you might as well get it in those 2 weeks. After that, they charge for it. Yeah,
After that, it's $10.
I mean, it makes sense, too, right? Because if you haven't played Forza Horizon 2 for a while, or you sold Forza Horizon 2, or you never picked up Forza Horizon 2, and you get this and you like it, you're like, wow, maybe I should go check out that Forza Horizon 2. I mean, I don't have any idea what the development costs were to put this together. Obviously, well, they're building on an established engine, but, I mean, it took...
Universal makes Fast and Furious. I'm sure whoever makes it, they paid in big for this tie-in, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, it might just be one of those, you know, it might just be a line item on the marketing budget for the movie. They're like, hey, you know, we you know, spend $25 million on marketing, you know, and 1.25 is to build a free game that'll get people excited. I don't have any idea, but, you know, there are a lot of different ways that people are trying to advertise and market and expose people to their brand. And to me, it's a great idea. I mean, I'm never going to go see a Fast and Furious movie in my life. I can guarantee you that. But sorry, Kevin Larrabee. But I will definitely turn my Xbox One on for the first time in many months when this comes out, download it, and give it a try. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'm clearly not their target market, though.
Yeah, Rich, Fast and the Furious is a great movie series. You should probably get in on that.
There are many great movies and television shows that I have, series that I have not watched for the past 7.5 years. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Just because you screwed up doesn't mean you can't fix that. You know, next month, there will be more Fast and the Furious movies than Star Wars movies. Think about it.
Well, for a few months, yeah.
And they'll be tied again. But.
Yeah.
In my brief spare time that I have, I enjoy playing video games as opposed to watching movies. That's just me. What can I tell you? All right. We have to talk about this. There has been rather interesting discussions around the prospect of this Joe Montana football game. People
never heard of it.
Really desperately want a alternative to Madden. Everybody wants an alternative to Madden. Even those of us who like Madden would love to see an alternative because, again, we're consumers. We love football. We love sports. We just want to see more, more, more. And all our industry has done is give us less, less, less over the last 10 years. So, I don't know. I'll go with you, Brian. Let's start off with you. What are, you know, without going too in-depth on it, you know, people, there have been forum posts that have said, okay, there's a new game coming out. It's going to be Xbox One and PC exclusive or Windows 10. It's a sim football game. It's going to be super competitive to Madden, but there's no real information. There's just a couple of these people spouting this stuff. Do you think there is any truth to not the fact that Joe Montana football will be a game, but the way that it is described in these anonymous forum posts?
Well, first of all, TJ, you shouldn't say that. You broke the news. You posted a picture on Twitter that proves 2K is involved, which apparently they're not. But
also, every joke I've made has been followed up the next day by someone doing something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's what happened there? So it is a game. We do know that.
We've seen some videos. We don't really know if it's actually a game.
Well, I think they claim it to be a game. So what we have, though, is a lot of people piecing together nuggets of information. It's barely qualifies as information, but you know, in the hopes that we get another game. And we do know it's coming. We don't know what platforms it's going to be for. It began with the idea that it was actually just going to be a mobile game. That seems to be not the case anymore. But yeah, there was one forum post in particular that kind of blew this thing open, and I'm not sure why. I think it's just because of the detail it went into that people kind of bought into it a little bit. There's a lot of faulty logic and incorrect information in there, but there's enough of it that made people think, you know, maybe there's something to this Xbox PC thing. You know, and I think people expect it to be NFL. I don't know if that's really certain yet, especially with some of the information, other information that's out there. Like the post claimed that the game would release in July, but there's no way if it was NFL licensed, the NFL would allow one game to come out a month and a half in front of the other game. So it's interesting to follow, though, because every year we get a rumor, usually just made up by certain people, that there's another football game on the way, that 2K is working on a football game or whatever. There's a possibility that there could be another NFL game. I don't think under the circumstances that are rumored right now necessarily, but I think there could be another NFL game if, of course, the extension that EA signed was not an exclusive. We don't know if it was exclusive because EA refused to comment on it, which was fishy at the time. And now you have to wonder as you start to hear rumors of various things. So, you know, it's kind of a fun thing. I'd rather be following a rumor like this about another game coming into the market than another game being canceled. So I'm, you know, I'm interested in what's going on here. But I'm not getting my hopes up particularly for a first year game or for, a new NFL product or anything like that until we actually have some facts. And no one really seems to have a grasp of what's going on yet. And they don't seem to want to divulge anything about their project.
Which, again, I am totally fine with, right? If there's no new football game, oh well. If there's a new football game that gets announced tomorrow, great. Until it's actually out and available, it's a non-issue. You know, the only thing that makes it obvious that this is fake is the July date to me, Brian, right? I mean, there is no way that a NFL licensed game would be allowed to come out before Madden. If anything, they'd have to come out on the same day. Now, again, you could say, oh, well, starting next year, the Madden could come out on July 2. But ultimately, this just sounds like a lot of baseless rumor mongering by people who love to get people excited because they know that there's millions of people out there who love football video games, who want to see more competition. They know the place in the heart of so many people that the last 2K football game played. The thing that I don't understand is why people do this. What benefit do they get? I don't understand what's the benefit.
Internet trolls, Rich. I mean, we'll never understand that whole thing.
I guess. I mean, you know, so it's not that I don't want a new next generation built from the ground up for the next generation football game. Of course I do. Everybody does. I don't believe it. And well, it doesn't make any sense.
I think what will end up happening most likely is parts of it will end up being true. So it'll either be an NFL game, but not on consoles. It might be PC, mobile, something like that. Or it'll end up being a generic game that's actually on consoles, which could release in July because that's when All Pro Football released. I think – I don't remember when Backbreaker released. But you can release an unlicensed game
– Whenever you want.
Whenever you want, yeah. Right. And so I think parts of it could end up being true, but the basis for this whole rumor, I think it just doesn't stand up for – what we would anticipate.
TJ, tell us why everything in that forum post was true and why we will see a brand new next-gen Microsoft platform NFL game next year.
Well, it's obviously true because no one has ever made an exclusive game and then not had to sign an NDA to talk about it. So obviously, if they're just not signing NDAs, that's how it works. Pretty sure that's how the industry works. And
well, you broke embargo with your image, TJ.
Technically, Joe Montana broke embargo.
Yeah,
shouldn't have retweeted that. I just looked. That tweet has had 40,000 impressions, which seems low because I feel like I get that favorited every single day. Rocky, calm. But yeah, weird stuff is going on with this. Like that day I tweeted out that we're working on montanatips.com, and the next day someone bought the domain.
It was actually the day before, though, that made that so interesting. It was registered the day before when I looked it up.
Interesting. So either I'm behind all of this, or I'm not. I'm fairly sure I'm not. Also, even more fuel to the fire, Joe Montana has since deleted that retweet. So obviously one of his handlers said, hey, Joe, yeah, you're not allowed to tell them that it's a 2K sports game yet. And that's why he had to go back and delete it.
But I saw all the people surmising on the forums that Joe Montana is so careful with what he tweets. It must be true.
Also, and that
TJ doesn't spread misinformation.
I've so never told a
it's got to be true.
Yeah, this game's. I feel bad for this game because really, no matter what happens, there's no way it can live up to this mythical hype that everybody's given to it. So even if it's a pretty good game, I think people are just going to rip it to shreds if it's not everything they expect it to be.
Well, let's hope that at E3, somebody walks on stage during the Microsoft press conference, announces this game as an Xbox One, Windows 10 exclusive title coming, you know, in August of 2016. Let's do it. I love it. Until it becomes announced by some form of organization that actually has the ability to announce it, i.e. Microsoft or the NFL, to me, this is all just a continued extension of what happens, as you said, Brian, every year. A bunch of people just say, oh, this is the year they announced, you know, the next 2K. Yeah, and I just don't believe it.
My biggest factor for this not being super true, especially the exclusivity part, whenever you watch a Madden commercial, it's 100% of the time on Xbox. Why wouldn't, if the NFL and Microsoft teamed up to go do this game, quote unquote, behind EA's back, why wouldn't EA just take all their marketing budget and go straight to PlayStation, where they already have more sales? They're going to have a bigger base to sell to people.
To me, this has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it at all, right? I mean, Sony allowed the MLB 2K games to be made for their console, even though they had an exclusive game for the show. Like, for years, you could buy MLB 2K and the show on the console, on the PlayStation console.
But that's Sony's first party. EA is a third party. They can just go wherever they want.
Right,
they can go where the gamers are, to the PS4.
Yeah. No, I get that, but to me that's people not understanding how the business works. Like Microsoft has their own platform. They want people to buy their platform. They are not beholden to EA to not develop first party games, and by building an NFL game, I wouldn't think for a moment about ticking off EA. What would EA do? What benefit would it be of EA to then reduce the number of people that could buy their games by then putting them on the platform and not marketing? To me, that doesn't even pass the slightest bit of the sniff test.
They've done it in the past, Rich, with online, right? In their
they
titles.
Killed, Xbox Sports. Studio.
Yeah, but that was because they wanted to run EA wanted to run their own servers, not have Microsoft run the game on their servers. That had nothing to do with exclusivity on the console. They still sold their games on it. They just didn't go on Xbox Live.
EA.
They could still sell their games on Xbox One, but not market it.
But why? Why? That doesn't make sense. That literally
Xbox
makes
is losing in the console war now.
But there are still, millions of people who have Xbox Ones. It makes no sense whatsoever for EA to not market to the second largest install console base, to not market their games like that. Zero sense whatsoever.
But right now they're not marketing it on the number one console.
Sure they are. They're marketing it. They're making the games for them.
But when you watch a Madden commercial, it's always on Xbox.
Right, but everybody knows that has a PlayStation 4 that Madden is on the PlayStation 4. I mean, here's my point. The whole...
But I think Microsoft is getting a lot of money, or EA is getting a lot of money from Microsoft for that.
Right, they do have a marketing partnership, right?
My whole
and plus, point, they have EA access on Xbox.
Yeah, of course they do. And I just, again, not saying anything. To me, the whole Microsoft wouldn't want to tick off EA by making an NFL game. Microsoft wants people to buy the Xbox One. Not nearly as many people are buying the Xbox One as the PlayStation 4. If the license is not exclusive, then they are. It's open competition. Nobody but Microsoft has the money and the resources to make an NFL game. They would not think twice about doing it if they could get the right people to make the game. I would do it. It wouldn't tick off EA. I'd be like, hey, guys are making an NFL game. And if I'm EA, I'm like, go for it. I mean, to me, the whole Microsoft not wanting to tick off EA makes zero sense. A lot of the other stuff might hold water, but that's bunk to me. I don't believe it for a second. And again, only because EA would then they would cost themselves much more money by not marketing the game or not making the game for the Microsoft platform. It'd be ridiculous. All right, moving on. Up next, the show comes out 2 weeks. Brian Weedy. You've been gauging the excitement of your readers. Where is the temperature gauge right now on the show coming out in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the show. It's, no pun intended there. But in this show, by the time the show, geez, I keep saying that. By the time MLB The Show comes out, it will have been just about 6 months since the last major sports game released, NBA 2K in early October. So,
I mean, yeah, Pro Evo would be the only one that was November. But, Pro Evo, the crossover between Pro Evolution and the show is probably relatively small, I would think.
Yeah. So I think people are ready for a new game, and the show, I say it over and over, the show is the steadiest sports game there is. It's the most reliable. You know exactly what you're getting from the show. So you go in knowing, hey, if I'm going to buy this game, I know I'm going to get out of it what I want to get out of it. You don't buy it for a great online experience you anticipate exactly what you're going to get for your money there and the value. So I think people make easy purchase decisions on the show more so than maybe other sports games. And so the feature set isn't really inspiring a lot of excitement, but just the game coming is, because everybody is expecting, that good sim gameplay authenticity that the series does exceedingly well. So, but every time we look at the show every year, it's not a huge seller. It's not, like I said, it's not generating an excitement for the non, the people who buy it every single year. It has trouble reaching a more casual crowd or newer consumers. So it just kind of stagnates there. But I'm really looking forward to the game just because it gives us something new to play. And my Mariners are going to be good this year. So I actually get to enjoy playing with my team.
Something to be said for that. TJ, you've watched the streams. I would assume you have. I believe I've seen you comment on all of them. What have you seen that has you, or what, if anything, have you seen that has you either personally looking forward to the most, or something that you've seen that has caught your eye, that interests you, has you ready to jump on the show the day it comes out? Because you even tweeted today, the countdown clock. So you are clearly looking forward to this game.
15 days till, I guess, the download can start? I think that's what that means.
Well, that worked great last year, so I'm sure it'll be perfect this year too.
There was no preloading last year. This year. But they didn't let you. Yeah.
I think I think it was supposed to be the first game with preloading, and then they took it away. But
they never confirmed whether it would or not. I remember that annoyed people.
Yeah, they pushed out the system update that allowed preloading like the week before, and everybody assumed it would be before. But it's all the little stuff. I'm really excited to have the licensed gear in there this year. I think that's going to make a big difference for someone like me who's looked at the same, essentially the same game for the last Jesus, almost 10 years now. Yeah, that's going to be a nice little touch. I really like what they're doing with the lighting stuff. That all looks pretty cool. Though there was a lot of stadiums that were really hard for me to hit in last year, so I just hope I don't end up starting a season and finding whatever stadium I play in a ton of the time is going to have, like, oh, whenever it gets to the seventh inning, I'm not going to be able to see anything because of the sun coming in.
No, the backdrop and stuff. Does that make it more difficult? Yeah.
Yeah, like last year, I could not hit in Seattle. Don't know why. Whenever, especially with lefties, couldn't see anything, just flailing all the time. Yeah, stuff like that. And I hope online works this year because I like the stuff they're doing with Diamond Dynasty and how you can earn a bunch of stuff in that just by playing normal games and you get packs. But I think a lot of people don't realize that a bunch of the Diamond Dynasty stuff, you're actually getting stuff for the other modes too, which nobody else or no other game really does that, where you're getting the boosts for your Road to the Show guys and the boosts and stuff you can use in franchise mode and stuff. So just kind of looking for the complete package, trying to figure out how I'm going to do my True 162 this year after the tragedy that was last year's True 162.
Yeah, you know what kept me playing the game more last year than any version of the show ever was not the graphics. It was not the lighting. It wasn't the player models. It was the fact that we had our online franchise and, you know, two or three or four of us were able to play in this world that even though we didn't play each other, we were all there together and it just was a lot of fun. I'm hopeful that can be improved. I mean, TJ, you and I played some online games late in the year and they were better. You know, they were not bad. They were not good.
Two people on that server. So
that's right. So, you know, I'm hopeful because, you know, all of the stuff that they've talked about sounds great, you know, and I'm sure it will be. The better lighting, the improved stadiums, you know, more player details, the licensed equipment, that's all great. But will that, you know, after the first couple of days, will any of that matter? What is it going to be that's going to keep you playing? The fact that Road to the Show appears to be virtually the same means I'm going to ignore it again. I don't think I've got it in me to play. No, I know I don't have it in me to play 162 games completely against a CPU without anybody else in the real world sort of being involved in it. You know, I doubt I'll do Diamond Dynasty related stuff. I doubt I'll even dabble in it because thankfully this year I'm not reviewing the game for any outlets, so I don't have to force myself to do that for 5 hours just to realize once again I don't like it. I can literally, for the first time in 10 years, I'm going to be able to go out and buy a game of the show the day it's released and just play it the way that I want to play it and then just talk about it on Press Row. So I'm really, frankly, just looking forward to that, not having the pressure of having to come up with a day one review, you know, after having it for a week.
I don't know what it says about the game, but for me, the thing I'm looking forward to most is actually the faster loading times, which is weird because that's not really a like a back of the box thing like that I would normally. But the show was the worst sports game in terms of loading times, and it was dreadful, especially because you'd play a mode like Road to the Show where you might be in the game for 5 minutes. I used to play as a relief pitcher. And so you go in, you might pitch an inning, sometimes there's just one out. You go in, you get in, and you're out, and you spend more time loading than you do actually playing the game. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. I think just that on its own could actually make the game a more enjoyable experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I mean, I have no doubt that the show will be great because the show is always great. I mean, it was our game of the year last year for crying out loud. I'm just interested how now that the brand new PlayStation 4 newness is no longer new, I guess, for a terrible way of saying that, but now that it's no longer, you know, this is now the second year, yes, it will be improved in a lot of ways. I'm excited to play it. I'm going to have it day one. You know, I'm going to play it a lot, but I'm wondering if it's going to sink its teeth into me like NBA 2K15 has. I play NBA 2K15 every day or whenever I can in two different modes. I'm nearly at the All-Star break of my second year with my player, and I just found out literally today on the treadmill, my coach walked into the locker room and told me I made my first All-Star game, which was a really cool moment. I'm playing right now, and I'm streaming them when I play them, and I've had a nice little group of people come in, sort of follow me. I'm in the Eastern Conference Finals of my the My GM season. I'm doing with the Brooklyn Nets, which I have completely changed that team. I traded away a bunch of players, a bunch of guys got hurt. It's been a blast. Like, I'm curious if the show will replace NBA 2K as my, okay, after the first week and everybody's excited about it, will that stay or will it stay NBA 2K? And again, it's just a Rich Christian personal thing. It's just, I'm curious to see how that will be for me. Go ahead, Brian.
The stuff you described there, Rich, tells me it's not, because you just described story mode related stuff, off the court / off the field stuff, which the show doesn't have. Because Road to the Show is, has gotten really old, because that's just a pure playing mode. You don't have anything off the field involved there. And then the franchise mode, yeah, you don't get any of that GM mode stuff in there either that you have in NBA 2K. So, I mean, there are different things to do in the show, obviously, but if those are what hooked you into NBA 2K, I'm not sure if the show has the equivalent for you there.
Yeah.
Or you just do what we did in our Madden League, and the story is our emails. So if you want, you can go right now to Twitter, at CyDarmer32 on Twitter. You can follow him. My Road to the Show guy is going to have a whole Twitter backstory and everything. That's how I'm going to keep myself into playing Road to the Show and have more fun that way.
There you go. I like it. And so it will be very interesting. Again, I have no doubt it'll be great. If online, and for me, really, it all comes down to online. If the online is decent and if the online franchise bugs are ironed out, I'm in. I am completely in. I because that is why we played. I personally played it through what, TJ? November? Is that when we finally wound down our last one? My goodness. I love that game.
Something interesting I want to test is this month, actually, Sony is releasing a PS4 update that adds things like suspend, resume,
right,
which actually might come in handy for baseball. One of the other features is 60 frames per second on share play. Now, the show was the only game we tested that really was just unplayable on share play.
That's right.
Which is interesting. I wonder if there's just something about the game that makes anything with a connection really horrible, because everything else played well on share play. But,
yes,
but maybe going to 60 frames per second, who knows, maybe the show becomes playable through share play too. Because it worked, there was no problem with timing and in Super Mega Baseball, for example. So it's not just a baseball thing.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see if there's if SharePlay actually works decently well for the show, or I'll just let TJ come in and SharePlay me a good Diamond Dynasty team, and then I'll play with them.
Yeah. Well, you got to play a lot of regular games so we can open a lot of packs.
Oh, packs.
We're going to have a lot of fun with the show. A lot of plans. We're going to do a lot of streaming the first week. We're going to do, some impressions early. We'll have a couple of Press Row podcasts that will incorporate impressions from a lot of us. Trust me, if you want to know what we think about MLB The Show, you will definitely know it for the couple, two or three weeks after it comes out. We're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff as we can. Speaking of NBA 2K, though, Brian, interesting thing popped up over the last few days, a week or so ago maybe. The NBA 2K14's servers are being shut down at the end of March. What does this actually mean, Brian? For example, a guy like me who spent, I don't know, probably 200 hours playing my player, once those servers are shut down, is he gone forever? Do I have to go download him onto my PS4 to never use him again because I'm well into two? Like, what's the deal? I mean, obviously you won't be able to play online, but is there more to it than just that?
Yeah, so it's interesting because this was really the first sports game that was always online.
That's right.
So everything was connected to the servers because of virtual currency. So we had always wondered what was going to happen when they actually do shut down the servers. 2K shuts down the servers pretty quick. This will be so 2K14 is being shut down at the end of March, which makes it, 17 months open with 2K14? Or actually, for the normal for the PS3, 360, 17 months. Even less for PS4, Xbox One. I guess it'd be 15 months, essentially. So what's happening is the servers are being shut down. So yeah, you can't play online. You can't play my team mode on there anymore either. And they haven't been allowing you to buy virtual currency for at least a few months. So now everything that's connected online is going to, other than those things, is going to convert into an offline mode. So you, if you, you're playing your My Career mode, that becomes offline, essentially, right? And your VC turns into SP, which is skill points, I think. So you'll still be able to continue that, but it's, you know, there's a reason why people played connected online. That was be able to buy virtual currency or earn it. It was just a different system. And offline, you kind of lose some of that. I'm not sure exactly what you're losing with the. I'd have to go back and look and see what you couldn't do offline that you could do online.
Is it?
But it's the same with my GM also.
Is it an update to the game that is going to do that, or
no? It's the same thing actually that would happen if you. So you remember the servers for 2K14 were down for long stretches of time. If you continued your mode when the servers were down, it's doing the same thing it did before. It would turn your save into an offline save, and then turn your VC into skill points. And so that actually caused problems back then because people would continue it while the servers were down, and then they couldn't reverse it. You couldn't get back to an online one with VC and stuff. So that's the same thing that's happening if you started an offline career or if you had it convert when playing offline. That's just happening now when it goes offline.
TJ, what's, as a consumer, what is the right amount of time that you would expect a game that is heavily reliant upon online being turned on, no pun intended, what's a reasonable amount of time that you would say a game like this should, its servers should stay on?
I'd probably say maybe at least 3 years, just because, you know, you're not going to get people that buy every single year. There's going to be some that'll buy every other year, and then there's still going to be stragglers coming from behind. But I don't know if you're playing a three-year-old game, are you really going on to play people online or to still play the My Team and Ultimate Team modes? So maybe 2 years is okay to turn it off after that, but this is still too short, I think, 17 months. I think EA usually did it. I think it was 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, they go 2 years, sometimes a couple months more than that.
Yeah. Or if it's the last game in a run, they'll usually leave for a couple of years. I think
NCAA is still on, right? Still on,
right?
Yeah.
And I think the 2K8 college basketball game, didn't that last for
four
or 5 years, something like that?
Long time.
Yeah, I think 3 years, I would say, minimum, just to be safe. But
To me, 2 years is the right one. I mean, if I buy a game, NBA 2K14, I would think that it would be reasonable to keep it its servers on until NBA 2K16. Like, 3 years to me is a stretch. I mean, you know, people move pretty quickly from experience to experience. I think, you know, I'm not even saying 18 months or 17 months is too short. Again, my personal situation is that the day NBA 2K15 came out is the day I stopped playing NBA 2K14, even though I pumped hundreds and hundreds of hours into 14. I often say, you know, one of these days I'll go back and I'll check and see what's going on, and I never do. And but I'm not like most consumers, right? Like, most consumers don't buy every sports game the day it becomes available and talk about it on the Press Row podcast. So, you know, to me, 2 years, you know, between releases is the right amount of time. Brian, what's your, you know, right amount of time that you would feel is fair to everybody? Because, again, it costs money and resources to keep these servers going too, right? So it's not just all on one side. You got to look at it from both sides.
Yeah, well, I think over the years, 2 years seemed about right to me, right? Because it's The numbers are minuscule of people still hanging around and playing, so there's really little reason to support those products anymore. Now, when we talk about shutting down the servers after 15, 17 months, for something that was built around being online and connected. That can be a little different.
Agreed.
I think just in general, 2 years, and I think you're right on with that, Rich, 2 years, because if you don't buy the next edition and you're still playing that game after 2 years, or if you just bought it and you don't care about the rosters and stuff, I think after 2 years, two editions, most people have moved on and accept that. There really is no backlash to shutting down servers for, you know, this year, for shutting them down to, you know, Madden 12 or something. Nobody's going to be upset about that. But if you shut it down for Madden 25 right now, there would be people who are bothered by that.
I think there's still people ripping packs in Madden 13's Ultimate.
Really?
Yeah. That's what they do when they get all angry about Madden 15 packs. They'll go back and rip Madden 13 packs.
And you know what? If I'm still collecting real world dollars on that, keep those servers going. I mean, that, you know, it's an interesting thing too. Like the VC in NBA 2K14 is not the VC in NBA 2K15. They're different. So, you know, I'm curious. I wonder why the guys decided to not allow VC to still exist anymore on 14. Maybe it's just a pure infrastructure play. Like they look, okay, well, the money that we can make, it's not worth it for the resources it's going to take to keep these servers going. But who knows? Interesting decisions that I'm sure will never be shared publicly, no matter how much we ask. All right, last one. Brian, you're doing a piece soon for the Sporting News about the impact of all of these, this insane NFL activity with free agents, and we haven't even had the draft yet, for crying out loud. Brian Witte, what is Madden 16 going to look like with all of these different players going to all these different places?
Yeah, if you remember recently, EA put out the list of like the five teams used most in Madden. And a few of them will stick around, the Seahawks, the Packers, the Patriots. I think the 49ers will be falling off. And who's the other team in there? I'm not sure, but there's a lot of changes that are being made, obviously. And I'm putting together a piece now. I'm in the process of writing it all, and really with like the top teams that improved, the top teams that dropped off, based on their acquisitions, and so not just the free agency, but also the trades and retirements and stuff. And so, among the teams I have that are they're sliding. Sorry, Rich, your Eagles are not going to be as good as they were last year.
What? Like, what do you think? They got rid of their quality quarterback, their Hall of Fame caliber running back, you know, their top receiver. What are you talking about? That's crazy.
Yeah. So of course I'm talking, you know, maybe it works out in real life, right? But in terms of Madden, it's a far weaker team. Number one, they become, I said this on Twitter, they might be the most fragile, injury prone team in Madden history.
Chip Kelly's special protein drinks will magically take care of all of that.
Yeah. So, So I let's see. I noted here, Bradford is by far the lowest rated active quarterback in Madden, with his injury rating of 71. So, pretty much, if you get sacked with Sam Bradford, he's going to be gone. Not just for the game, but if you're in a franchise mode, probably like six games, right?
Yeah. That's not really saying much, because Andrew Luck gets sacked and he's got a 98 injury rating. He misses 6 weeks.
That's you got to give me credit, because that's because I hit stick him every time. So.
Well,
yeah.
Stop doing that, please.
I know. I feel bad for you sometimes. And then other times, no. So Ryan Matthews is a 79 injury. That's one of the lowest for running backs. Walter Thurman is a 77 injury. That's one of the lowest for cornerbacks. Kiko Alonso, of course, coming off a year lost to an ACL, and DeMarco Murray, he has a decent injury rating in the game, 85, but he's actually a little more injury prone than that. He's lower than McCoy. So it's kind of dangerous there. And so, yeah, they did get DeMarco Murray, but I would also argue that LeSean McCoy is a better video game back, and anybody that's played Rich in Madden would know how he uses him. He won't be able to use Murray quite the same way. So.
Wait a second. You're telling me we're not going to be able to import our rosters from Madden 15 next year?
You wish. You wish for a franchise mode. So yeah, it's not all Eagles, though. 49ers, obviously, they lost a lot of players, a couple great ones to retirement. Then I have possibly the Lions, who lost their great defensive duo, defensive tackle duo, although they did get Haloti Ngata. The Raiders are an interesting one because they had $50 million cap space, and they didn't sign really any impact players. You know, they got a good center, but in Madden, come on. Nobody cares about a good center in Madden.
The offensive line is crucial in Madden. That's why LeSean McCoy gets all those yards. All my offensive linemen are some of the top rated in the league. So, you know, from a Madden perspective, having a good offensive line is probably more important than having good skill players.
They didn't really upgrade, though, because Wisniewski was already pretty good. And then the Patriots, which is not just sour grapes for me, but they lose Revis, Browner, and Wilfork, which are three really impact players that did bring in Jabal Sheard. But so they're just not as effective of a Madden team anymore. Because I think, if anything, with Madden, cornerback, most people don't control the cornerbacks. So those talented cornerbacks you can just leave out there on an island, more important than anything. And then teams on the rise, I like what the Bills did. They've got some really dynamic players there now. The only question really is quarterback, and Castle is a little better than EJ Manuel there.
I think that's a massive question at quarterback for the Bills.
Yeah.
Massive. Yeah.
So but with the Bills, you actually get a choice now. Do you like the more mobile Manuel, who has a stronger arm? And again, we're talking about Matt, not real life. Or Matt Castle, who's more accurate and has he's just more accurate. That's it, as far as I can see. So you have the choice there, kind of at quarterback for people who control the Bills. The Dolphins, I really like what they've done. The Seahawks getting Jimmy Graham just makes them more explosive. The Colts. It won't be a good franchise team, TJ, because half of their players are going to retire in the next year or two. Yeah. You already went through that with the 49ers once, so I would say don't pick the Colts next season. But for 1 year, with Andre Johnson and Frank Gore.
What I do with 1 year this year with the Colts? Got my ring?
Got it. Your ring. So yeah, that's just I'm kind of putting it together. I'll break it down on Sporting News again this week. But just the Madden teams that improved or dropped in effectiveness for next year in terms of, you know, playing online or in a franchise mode.
Good stuff. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. It's always nice doing a live hangout. It's good to be back. As I said, when the show comes out, you can look around these parts for all sorts of live coverage, commentary. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. Between now and then, of course, we'll have this audio will be part of this upcoming week's Press Row podcast. And the good thing about recording on a Sunday and then having it go live on a Friday is that between now and then, you'll probably have EA announced PGA Tour coming out just in time for the Masters. You'll probably have Joe Montana Football officially announced for the Xbox One and Windows 10. And that NBA 2K14 servers have been extended for another year and a half. So that'll
if that happens, we'll just re-record and pretend that it was all. We knew it was coming.
That's right.
Well, all right. As if on cue, as you heard earlier in the show, as Brian and TJ and I were discussing the prospects of EA Sports' golf outing, whether it would come out this year, whether it wouldn't, whether we would see information about it soon or not. Well, almost as if on cue, EA Sports then just this week announced the fact that, yes, not only is in fact their game a real thing and is it coming out, it now has a name. It has a cover athlete, and it's got at least a little bit of information that is real, legitimate information. So, of course, we bring in our friend Owen Good from Polygon, the resident golf expert, among many other things. Owen, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Rich. Thanks for having me on.
So here's what we know. We know the game from EA Sports, their new PGA golf game, is called Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. There are several different ways that you can take that. So let's just start with the very beginning. Rory McIlroy is now the new name, the new face of EA Sports Golf. What do you think about that?
Well, I thought as this, okay, so obviously this series went on hiatus in 2013. EA Sports was looking to outsource what was supposed to come out last year, but that didn't come together. And actually, the studio that they were working with ended up making the golf club, so there's a little intrigue there. But I thought 2 years ago that this series was moving in the direction of being more about the courses, because as golfers are fond of saying, you know, the course is your adversary, as opposed to, you know, a stable of two dozen real world golfers, some of them celebrities, you know, licensed to appear in the game. People generally don't, you know, buy this game to play as someone else. They play as themselves, you know, on these courses that they've never visited in real life or can't play in real life, or they create a career and then they're, you know, they live the fantasy of being a tour professional. So I really thought it was going in that direction, especially with the inclusion of Augusta National since 2011. So the inclusion or reaching out to Rory McIlroy to make him a cover star is a little intriguing to me, not because I think he's unworthy, not because I think he's unrecognizable. He's the world number one golfer and will be for some time. I think he's held that for the past 50 to 70 some weeks or something like that. I mean, it's substantial.
And he is, correct me if I'm wrong, but generally speaking, going into a major, he's typically a favorite as well.
Right. He's what everybody is going to be talking about, either on television or on sports talk radio. He's 25 years old. He's won four majors. It's interesting. Craig Evans, the guy who used to do the marketing for Tiger Woods PGA Tour Series at EA Sports, he mentioned that when they signed up Tiger Woods in 1998, I think, beginning the 16-year run he had with the series, he had one major. Pretty interesting comparison there. I mean, I don't know. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other whether this game should have a name on it and a cover star, or if it should just be, you know, PGA Tour. But if EA Sports was going to go in the direction of, you know, we actually need a guy who can sell this, you know, somebody, you know, golf fans are going to, you know, gravitate towards somebody who's recognized, that will make them want to buy it. Sure, you can't do better than Rory McIlroy. I mean, what I'm interested in is when Tiger Woods out of the picture, will any of his longtime enemies join the game now? I mean, will we see Phil Mickelson?
Right.
I don't know that. Will we see Vijay Singh? I mean, I don't know. Will we see Sergio Garcia? But I mean, that's kind of, you know, funny little insider stuff. But it's a good choice. It's just a little surprising to me that they're going back to the, you know, the model of, well, we're going to make this about a golfer, where people were like, nah, man, it's about me. I mean, they want to beat Tiger Woods. They want to beat Rory McIlroy. They want to beat, you know, any of the other golfers that have appeared in this game, but they don't necessarily want to play as them.
The other interesting thing about the title is that, unlike really any Tiger Woods that I can remember, there's no number associated, i.e. Yes. No year, right? This is not Rory McIlroy PGA Tour 15. This is Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. Do you think that means something, or do you think that this, just because it's sort of a reboot of the brand on the next-gen consoles, don't read too much into that?
Well, we don't have EA Sports UFC coming out this year, do we?
Good point.
You know, I think they might have. I don't necessarily know it means something in the sense that, you know, this forebodes, you know, an aggressive DLC plan where you're going to buy the series and then you're just going to continually update it with courses and events and other things like that that are premium and cost money. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that for sure. I think at minimum, you can say, okay, they looked at this and they uncoupled themselves from the obligation of putting this game out every year. And what you saw with the Tiger Woods PGA Tour series was this kind of listlessness is sort of a bad word to use, but it's very hard to come up with something truly innovative year after year. I mean, team sports titles can rely on, and I know we hate saying it, but they can rely on the appeal of, I want the current league.
Sure.
You know, on my console. There really is no current league when you're talking about individual sports like tennis or golf.
Right.
It's not like you know, these are guys who are changing, you know, uniforms, changing divisions,
right.
You know, and certainly it's not, you know, a roster of you know, free agents or whatever that change over, change the makeup of your favorite team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tiger Woods, the Tiger Woods PGA Tour Series was really kind of, you know, grasping to, you know, well, what are we going to add this year? And it was, I think it was like, you know, the Ryder Cup or team play, I think is what they called it. And that was the year before they added Augusta National, which was a huge addition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was landmark not only for the series but also for all of sports video gaming. But then they was like, okay, well, how do we provide an encore for that? And they had this, you know, recreation of Tiger's lifetime, not just his career, that was intriguing, but a little, in some cases, even silly. And then they piled onto that a course mastery model that not many people got, and they felt that it was like trying to, you know, grub them out of money and like rent, you know, pay greens fees, in other words. So I think EA has looked at its experience with this in the past and said it's very, very difficult for an individual sport that doesn't justify an annual release on the basis of its roster, on the basis of having teams that may even change uniforms or stadia. We don't want to hitch ourselves, to commit ourselves to a Tiger Woods PGA Tour 17 a Rory McIlroy PGA Tour 17 next year if we're selling really good this year and we don't have enough good ideas to justify a title next year. And I think the more digital medium that we're dealing with now, where, I mean, you know, people are downloading Battlefield Hardline today, all 49 gigabytes of it.
Mm, yeah.
And you know, good luck. I mean, it'll take you 12 hours before you're going to enjoy that thing. But still, I think EA looked at it and said, if we do a good job with this, if we're selling really well with this, if the improvements we've made to this are good, let's, you know, let's not let perfect be the enemy of the good. Let's leave good enough alone. We will revisit this series when it really needs a coat of polish, you know, like the individual sports that they make for boxing, for UFC, you know, and we haven't seen Fight Night since 2011.
Right. So a lot of questions I want to ask, but I guess the next one is, what kind of game do you think this will be? I mean, will this basically be the game that we have come to know from the past, just on next-gen consoles with prettier courses, i.e., you know, a career mode where you create yourself and you come up through the ranks and you build up your stats and you play and you play and you play? Will it have all those sort of traditional modes that we are aware of, or, you know, that we are used to with this brand, you know, from EA Sports? Will it be different? Will it incorporate a lot of the more social aspects or real-time playing against your friends, things like we have seen, for example, in the golf club? Like, what's your gut tell you this game is going to be much closer to the more traditional PGA Tour game from EA, or do you think they're going to take some chances with what releases?
Well, from what I've heard about this game, you know, they have brought in the Frostbite engine, which is a very interesting discussion. I mean, Frostbite is what runs the Battlefield hardware. Software in that series, and they've made a big deal about talking about, you know, integrating it with this game. It's not the Ignite engine, which, as we know, is not really an engine. It's just more a set of, you know, efficient shared practices. But Frostbite is an engine, and one of the things that it does is it renders the entire course all at once, because consoles now have the firepower to be able to do that. And the benefit to the user is you don't have between hole loading times. I mean, this is the company mantra. I'm taking all of that on faith. But the reason I bring up Frostbite is they have had to spend a lot of time taking their existing assets, you know, the course data that they have, how it plays, how it's laid out, you know, the surfaces on it, the trees, all that other nonsense, and, you know, integrating that with a completely new engine. And I don't know anything about video games development, but all of that sounds like a very tall task to me. And I'm going to go ahead and speculate that that's like the majority of their development. What I expect to see is a game that is going to rely on the visual impact of new generation hardware, first and foremost, because golf is a very beautiful sport, you know, where you play it, everything like that. It's going to rely on, you know, physics that don't jolt you out of immersion. Like when you shank a drive in this game and it hits a tree, it falls straight down. And, you know, at a place like Oakmont, man, or Oak Hill, I forget which. No, it's Oakmont, you know, where you have really narrow fairways, basically, and shots that can just go into the trees and just ruin your day. That makes a hell of a lot of difference. I expect to see a game that is going to play very smoothly, is visually arresting, really exploits a lot of things that may be subtle to people, but I don't expect to see things that are really going to, like, you know, rock the foundations of golf video games. I would hope to see some sort of improvement in presentation, but I think one way presentation will be improved is, again, we said there's going to be no loading times between holes. That created an obligation for some just absolutely awkward and awful loading screens and like broadcast stats pages that just made no sense. I mean, you'd be going between hole 12 and 13 at Pebble Beach, and they'd be going eagles this tournament, leaders, and there would be like, you know, 12 guys with zero eagles in the first round.
Yes.
And so, you know, just things like that to sort of pull you out of it. And they're going to have a new broadcast team,
right?
They're getting, well, I'm sure you know what the next topic on this probably will be. But I expect – what I really don't want to see is – I felt like Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14. God knows, man.
Whichever the last one was, right?
14. I felt like it was probably the strongest playing golf video game, you know, the series has ever been.
You played that game a lot, if I remember correctly.
At least 1,000 holes. And, you know, I felt like the advanced shot shaping made sense. Mm-hmm. I felt like the differentiation of a player, that you could have a draw or a fade golfer, you could have a power or a control golfer, or you could just balance it all out. I felt like that made sense and added a level of differentiation, you know, especially to a career mode. I really like that a lot. I have a methodology and a muscle memory for how I read my greens, how I, you know, hit my advanced shots, and how much, you know, draw and fade I have to put on them. I really don't want them to change that. That said, if you've been on hiatus for 2 years, I would absolutely expect some kind of a control change. I think there's probably something in there that they don't like that they want to refine, and so I'll just have to accept that. What they really need to do, though, is figure out some way to make that career interesting beyond a single season. Because if you play 4-round events, as I do, and I realize that I am probably well outside the norm there, but if you play 4, 3, 2-round events, you're going to have so much XP by the end of the year that it makes your advancement meaningless in second year, third year, whatever. You're going to max out your attributes. You're going to have all of the equipment and the bonuses that it confers. And so what they really need to do is, I think, incorporate something that is kind of like the old Dear Departed NCAA football series, where you could have a difficulty on one level, but you accrue experience on a different one. So maybe if you're a low-level golfer and you don't want things like really demanding, you can have a difficulty on one end, but you're still crawling up the XP ladder so that you actually have some kind of a sensible progression. Because, you know, this – and I'll give you a good segue here. You know, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14 had all four majors under their own names for the first time ever. And, you know, that was very interesting. But even then, you know, my second career, it was kind of hard for me to get fired up for going back to the U.S. Open after I won it in my first year. And this year, I think there are a lot of signs pointing to the absence, regrettably, of Augusta National and the Masters. And if they're not in it, that's, you know, if you have a career that does not truly reflect the biggest events, and I know that Augusta and the U.S. Open and the British Open are not tour events. I understand that. But they're still where all the tour golfers are playing that particular weekend. If you have a career that does not have all of the major events that everybody sees, you know, on the television as they follow golf, it's pretty damaging. And, the news doesn't look good on Augusta right now.
So why, and instead of asking the question, will Augusta National, the Masters be in the game? I'll ask it slightly differently. Why wouldn't it be in the game?
Well, I can answer that two ways. The first is, what are the clues that tell me it's not in the game? And the first is that it's releasing in June, mm-hmm. and the Masters are, you know, it's the first Saturday, first Thursday in April. And if Augusta was in this game, it would behoove them to release this, you know, ahead of that, not necessarily to stoke interest in the tournament. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything to Augusta National. They don't need money. They don't need spectators. They do plenty well there, but for the game itself. And you would figure that this game, even for all of the challenges that are being posed by going to a new engine, you know, integrating Augusta National's course should frankly be no different than integrating Bethpage Black. It's all the same complex soup of you know, it takes this much time to do a golf course. You know, all they're doing is just taking information and putting it into this engine. So I believe, like, if they had, you know, an agreement with Augusta National to put that course in that event and all the other stuff in the game, they would definitely have plenty of time to do it on a two-year cycle, and they would be releasing this game, you know, in a week. So that's the first thing. The second is that they're replacing the announcement team. Jim Nance, who is he has a very tight relationship with Augusta National if he is not a member of that club. I don't know, but you know, I'm recalling back in 2011, you know, some publicity interview and Nance was made available, and it was a great interview, by the way. I mean, he was, you know, sincere, responsive, and attentive. He wasn't just going through the motion. But in an unguarded moment, he said more or less that he was asked onto that project by Augusta National, or that it was their insistence or preference that he be the new voice of this video game, which, you know, Scott Van Pelt was the former announcer. So if Nance is no longer there, I just look at it, it's like if the Masters was in this game, there's no way Augusta National would tolerate anyone else other than Jim Nance announcing it, video game or otherwise. So if he's gone, and Faraday to a lesser degree, if they're gone, I don't think it's in the game. If Augusta is not in the game, and it probably isn't, and I've had a lot of people, you know, I emailed and asked EA Sports, hey, what's going on with Augusta, and didn't get any response. You know, they got real quiet when I brought that up. And I talked to somebody else who worked on the project, and they said that it was, you hear words like it was a very unusual relationship. And if they parted ways, it's not because of money. That club doesn't need it, and EA Sports definitely has whatever they would want if they did need it, you know, to pay it, because it's such a drawing card for anybody. For me, if they parted ways, it would have to be something about control. It would have to be whether that club or that event or that course was given, you know, box cover prominence versus something else, or how it would be portrayed relative to other courses. You know, if we're going to be in this, by God, you know, we're the Cadillac of this lineup, and we're going to see it, you know, everything is going to reflect on us. And EA Sports said, we actually want to do, you know, like more of a PGA Tour game. We'd like you guys to be a component of that, but we're not going to give the whole thing over to you. And Augusta said, nah, we can walk from this.
So let's you and I, we differ on our personal opinions on the golf club from HBO Studios, which, you know, I enjoy it. You don't. And not, that's not to say you don't, you know, think it's a particularly good game or anything like that. You just don't. It just personally didn't.
I went back to play it, you know, before this conversation, you know, to get in a couple of rounds just to make sure, because this was a game that really didn't grab me. Mm-hmm. And I still hold to my original complaint, which is there's just not enough visual information that I need
right.
to make my shot.
Right.
And so there's a huge learning curve. There's a huge trial and error balloon in this that may be for some people. And I, you know, God bless you. And if, enjoy it. I mean, seriously.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's a stiff challenge, but it is not for me. Personally, right. It's not for me.
Look, there are plenty of games that it seems like everybody in the world likes except for me. So I'm totally with you there. But from a, you know, design and execution perspective, the golf club has really laid out a very impressive blueprint on how to do things differently. Now, obviously, they're not licensed, so that automatically, you know, sort of gives them a blank slate. But the golf club launched as a, you know, online-driven social golf game, no licenses, very much based around your friends and playing on courses with your friends and letting people create their own courses and not having specific attributes. You know, everybody's the same golfer and things like that, not having a career mode and stuff like that, but being able to like play tours and set up different things yourself. But over time, it has added new modes. It has added and now a career. It is continuing to, you know, it's added a handicap system. Mm-hmm. It continues to evolve. It is not a yearly release, although just recently they announced that they you know, they have something, I forget exactly what it is. It's kind of like a game.
It's a special edition or
which is retail release. So the golf club has laid out a very interesting blueprint for modern next generation console golf. Mm-hmm. Do you think that PGA Tour will follow something along those lines, i.e. what they launch with in June will not necessarily be what the game is in September or in December or in February of next year? Or do you think that overall, well, obviously there will be new stuff coming out, do you think that it will be much more along the traditional lines of here are the courses day one, and then we got a bunch of DLC courses 3 months later, 6 months later, 9 months later? What's your sense of how this game will be supported, managed, run over the course of the at least a year to 18 months?
Well, I mean, I think we can count on some pretty robust and sincere post-release support, you know, in this. I mean, we certainly saw it with UFC. I know they're made at different studios. The golf club, you know, it's, I don't have nearly the exposure to its social features that you do. So I might be talking a little bit out of school here. I think that in terms of social play and social appeal, it's definitely got a leg up there. Whereas, you know, the Rory McIlroy PGA Tour product is going to be a little more of a traditional approach to golf, which is, hey, here's your fantasy of playing at Pebble Beach at St. Andrews. And it's you and the course. It's something that's a little bit more insular as opposed to playing with friends and discovering things, frankly. You know, that's one of the things about the golf club, which is, you know, these are all fictitious courses, but it's not like they're, you know, trivial. They're right. Challenging.
Yes.
And they have features on them that you go, I mean, it kind of pissed me off when I'm like, how am I going to get up this false front green?
Right.
When I don't know how hard I need to hit the ball.
Right.
But, you know, you're not seeing completely weird stuff out there. And we'll get to this in a minute, because obviously there was the infamous video of a battleship That's slamming right. through a fairway at E3 2014 in what is now Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. But I think EA Sports is going to push this in a little more of a traditional direction. I don't know what they're going to do as far as they had social features that were like, you know, reconstituted on in three different ways over three different years. Mm-hmm. The country clubs did persist over 2 years. I believe I've got that right. They were different, at least in terms of the tournaments that you could play in 14, which they turned the servers off in September. So, you know, there's no way for me to go back and check on this. But in 12, which was the first appearance of Augusta National, you know, they had, I don't know if anybody remembers this, it was the GamerNet, I think is what it was called, where it was you get to a hole and somebody had this distance of a drive and somebody made this long of a putt. And it was all of these sort of individual records that you could shoot for or try to set. So EA has been kind of scattershot on the social aspect of its golf game. And of all things that I would expect to change, I think that that will be, you know, another one of them. I'm not looking to it to outdo what the golf club does, you know, on a social level. I'm looking to it to outdo what the golf club does on a gameplay level, on a presentation level for sure, because, you know, I know I'm not watching a television broadcast or a virtual one, but it's still a little kind of thin there. And then on, you know, obviously bringing courses that are recognizable out in the real world. So I think I think Rory McIlroy PGA Tour is going to be a little more of a traditional product, and you know the golf club will exist as a very nice sim alternative to that, and that they will both be happy to do different things.
Will Rory McIlroy PGA Tour be EA's first console sports game as a service in one degree or another? Meaning, at least it will not have a new version of it released a year from now as a full $60 boxed copy.
Well, I can't crystal ball that, you know, and say, you know, a definitive yes, because I'm not a market maker and I don't really know what the state or the capability is of what's going to support that. It would seem to be a yes, though. You know, we're seeing, my God, you know, when Star Citizen launches, whenever the hell that thing launches, it's going to be like 100 gigabyte download, you know? And this is where we're going with the things that we will be downloading or we will be expected to download or able to download, even though it takes forever on what I have. You know, God, that's a gigabyte for every, you know, $1 million raised in crowdfunding for Star Citizen. So, yes, it would seem that the ability to deliver that kind of thing that we've all fantasized about, which is you release the main structure of the game, you improve it piecemeal, and somebody buys that, and then you have access to, or you are premium things you can buy on it that are released later that continue to justify it, would seem to make a lot of sense. The other reason that it makes a lot of sense is while this would pay a licensing fee to courses and to the PGA Tour, and then also to the individual golfers who appear, it's not paying the same kind of licensing to a league or to its players association that really mandates an annual release just to, first of all, because the league and their players association want it because it's more royalties, but also because it, you know, therefore means, you know, more sales. You know, you're going to sell a lot more if you have two editions in 2 years than if you have one and have to reheat it through other schemes or things like that. So, you know, this game would be the one that is most positioned to be able to do something like that. But really what that means is having more courses, frankly. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to launch with.
Right.
This is a game that has had in total something like 40 or 45, with half of them being DLC. And the big issue with that was, you know, the discs that they were limited by the disc space. And these courses take up, they're huge amounts of information, much more than any stadium you know, or arena in another SimSports title. So, you know, they would have to pick and choose, you know, what were the most popular courses each year, and, you know, obviously what were the ones that they were paying the most money to put in the game, and offer those as on the base. And, you know, they had all this other information. How do they leverage that? And they would sell that as DLC, and everybody would go, oh, well, you held these courses out because you just wanted to buy more and all this other nonsense. Now they're sort of freed from that. If it's a truly digital product, they don't really have to worry about that so much. But I would not expect to see Rory McIlroy PGA Tour, you know, launching with 36 courses, 40 courses right off the bat, because they're not that stupid. They've got to have something that they can sell you extra, and they've got to have other packages, and, you know, they're gonna season pass this thing for sure.
Well, the other thing that I think about too, like when you go to something like this, you have a lot more options to do things that will get somebody interested in September or you know, next April, right? Like, for example, just this past weekend, there was like, I forget which you know, pre-Masters tournament it was, but there was an amazing finish on the last hole where the guy who won it holed like a 25-foot birdie to win it. When you've got a game that is heavily tied to online, you could very quickly, like, create, you know, PGA Tour moments, a la like Madden moments or things like that, where you could continue the, you know, make the game much more current. Or, you know, as the British Open gets closer, you could create new, you know, worldwide competitions, or the ability for you to, you know, get the,
well, that's what they were doing in 14 to a degree. You know, they were letting you go in and play against the most recent results if they had the course and the event in the game,
right?
And so, yeah, I mean, they've experimented in this direction, and you're right, it does tie into things. I mean, I guess what I would say to that is, you know, Madden and NBA Live and FIFA, you know, they have the Ultimate Team modes, and you know, those things are huge revenue drivers, and then of course they create relevance for those by, you know, attaching new cards and things like that to new, you know, current events. And I don't expect to see an Ultimate Team in this, because it would make no sense. But I would expect to see, you know, online tournaments, or, you know, recreate this shot or recreate this sequence of holes in which somebody went five under, to keep interest going in the game. I think the problem conceptually is that it's a little bit easy. It's a little bit easier to do that with something like the golf club, where the courses really aren't the star of the show the way they are in Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. You know, you're all about whatever the game that you're playing and how good you are and how good you can be. I mean, obviously you do have some course knowledge and course memory if you play them enough, but you know, with EA Sports, it's a little bit more about, what am I playing on this week? Is that something I'm seeing on the TV this week? What happened there? So it's a little more rigid in terms of reheating that kind of content.
So I guess last question, although we could keep on going. Unlike many other sports games, not all, but unlike many other sports games, there are multiple alternatives available right now for people who want to play golf on next generation systems. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, PowerStar Golf, while not a sim golf game, still a golf game, and a next generation golf game exists on the Xbox One.
And a challenging one too.
Yeah. And the Golf Club exists on Xbox One and PlayStation 4 and PC. Mm-hmm. There, I don't know if it's confirmed or if there's still rumors, but, you know, potentially a Hot Shots golf game coming out for the PlayStation 4 at some point this year. But even without Hot Shots, right, there are ways to play golf right now. Does that help, hinder, or is that no material impact to the sales hopes of Rory McIlroy PGA Tour?
I think it drives it back to, what is this thing uniquely deliver, and that is, you know, real world courses, you know, combined with a simulation experience. I mean, Hot Shots and Power Star are arcade golf. Even if, you know, some of them you know, Power Star in particular, I put a lot of time into that. And then, you know, at first I was kind of PO'd about it because I thought I should be hitting the ball 400 yards. And then it's like, no, actually, I kind of see how this fits together now, even with the power-ups. You know, golf club, sim experience, not real-world courses, user-generated content, that's a very big thing. I think that will definitely continue to differentiate it because I don't see how EA Sports, if it's dealing with all this other stuff with the engine upgrade, has the time or the desire to put in something with such a high variable as user-generated content. So that's where the golf club sets itself apart. I think this sort of all funnels back to, you know, EA Sports resting on its bread and butter, which is I want to play, you know, Pebble Beach. I want to try to, you know, carry the water and cut that dog leg on 18, but not hit it so far that I put it behind that damn tree, you know, and all of the things that you sort of remember from these courses that you do see on television in real life. And, you know, you're playing them virtually. Nobody is under the illusion that you're out there in actuality. But that's where EA sets itself apart. So I see these as three different games, you know, that have different appeals and do things differently. And there's more than enough room at the table there.
Well, all right, Owen Good from Polygon, our resident golf expert. Thank you very much, sir, for coming on. I appreciate it. And as always, look for Owen to regularly join us on the Press Row podcast. Owen, I guess just to get you out of here on this, how do you personally feel? Are you feeling good about PGA Tour? Are you happy with what you're seeing?
I said this on Twitter yesterday. It's hard for me as a fan, you know, to separate my disappointment at the idea that Augusta will not be in this, you know, which it's not looking like it's going to happen. I will hang on to Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14 for that experience. It was still a very, very good game. But I very much wanted to see that on next generation hardware. It's probably not going to happen, but it won't prejudice how I approach the rest of the game. There is still a very solid gameplay engine that they have built. And so long as they can pull that, you know, into the next generation, I'll be satisfied. Because when, you know, when I look back on it, you know, I said I played at least 1,000 holes. That's not 1,000 holes at a single course. It's spread out all over the world. They have an enormous roster of things, of courses and places and experiences. And, of course, we really didn't touch on, you know, the fantasy stuff, which can sound a little gimmicky, but, you know, Greek Isles is a bone crusher tradition. People who've played this series from a long time, and that's a fake course. So, you know, I am sure it's going to play very well. It's probably going to lack some things that I've really enjoyed in the series in the past, but that's business.
Interesting days ahead, and the bottom line is more games are better than less games. So we're glad that PGA Tour is back and looking forward to seeing what it's got to offer. All right, well, one of the great things about being a pundit of sorts is that you get to talk about rumors and innuendo, and then sometimes rumors and innuendo turn into facts of sorts. And so if you remember earlier this week, my friends Brian Weedy and TJ Lowerman and I were chatting about the rumors around a potential football game called Joe Montana Football 16 or something like it. And we had a discussion about it. And since then, a couple of interesting things have happened. The most interesting being Joe Montana himself tweeted an image of a football game of some sort. And that image included him throwing a football. Brian Weedy, why was the image tweeted? What does it really tell us? And what does this mean?
So we're coming off a big discussion of the rumors and the hopes and dreams of sports gamers everywhere for a new football game. And we have these rumors that really had begun to grow out of control. And for the sake of the potential success of that game, the developers and Montana, obviously, they couldn't let that linger for much longer. They couldn't let it go on for months with people making assumptions about the game that it would be, in particular, that it would be NFL licensed. If it's not NFL licensed, which this image seems to suggest, they couldn't let people continue to believe that and build up expectations only to be further crushed when the confirmation that it was unlicensed came down the line. So it seems obvious to me that this image was released specifically to quash those rumors, because it features a generic team, actually two generic teams, obviously, on the field, a generic stadium, and what appears to be either generic players or maybe legends. It's hard to tell, but it's certainly not current players. So that kind of puts to bed the NFL thing, because they're not going to lead with something that's going to disappoint people as their first piece of media. They haven't even really officially announced the game yet. That might come at E3, or it might come beforehand. So we're looking at what's, in all likelihood, an unlicensed game. There's really no reason to think otherwise now. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, and I've written about why, creative freedoms, and they can release it whenever they want at a more appropriate time of the year, instead of having to go head-to-head with all the other sports games. There's a lot of things they can do to be successful with a game like that, and there are certainly lessons to be learned from why games like Backbreaker and All-Pro Football 2K8 didn't work, and based on statements they've made, it seems like they've definitely learned from those. So we have the image now, puts to bed, I think in most people's minds at least, reasonably puts to bed that it's not going to be an NFL-licensed game. And we can move on and move and look at what they're going to do innovative to try to stand out, because that's what an unlicensed game has to do.
TJ, you saw the image. What do you think about it?
It looks like your standard in-engine game screenshot. I actually ended up going into Madden to see if I could replicate the image, and I put them out side by side on my Twitter account at ThatSportsGamer. Go give me the follow. Yeah, and Madden looks better. That's what everybody said on Twitter. Usually when we get these pre-release shots, they're super made up, looking nice. Colin Kaepernick looks like he's there, and we all know the Madden 2006 video, how that was a little overblown for what we actually got. This really doesn't seem like that. This looks like it could actually be an in-game shot, but that's doesn't really look too impressive from what we saw. Obviously the most important thing is going to be the actual gameplay of the game when it comes out. But right now, I'm not too impressed by what we've seen.
Well, one thing we should also note is you say you're not too impressed by it. We don't know what platform still. Right. I mean, we've maybe had the NFL thing answered now. We still don't know if it's even coming to consoles. I mean, that could be a mobile game. There are definitely mobile screenshots that have been put out that have been comparable to that. You don't play from that perspective. You're not going to see it from that perspective. So just like the first screenshots you see for Madden are not really representative of how the game looks. So there's so many questions to be answered, and I think this was just the first piece of it to, hey, let's put that whole NFL thing aside. That's not real. Let's put that aside so we can actually focus on what the game's going to be instead of what it's not in a month or two or whenever that time comes.
One of the things that I love is the breakdown that you immediately get from people, you know, who look at the image and you're like, I'm the guy, oh, I see the image, okay, yeah, there's Joe Montana, there's big stadium, you know, there's a guy chasing him. But then, you know, I read in the commentary after it, and it becomes apparent how people really, really are passionate about getting another football game. You know, and they break down what they see, like, okay, well, you can tell both uniforms are actually the same, just with different colors, and they're kind of, not particularly great looking uniforms, you know, perhaps, or the sidelines appear sort of barren, but that could just be the angle. And, Joe Montana, actually his skin tone is different than the real Joe Montana. He's like got really ripped muscles and stuff. And TJ, I think you even called for the firing of the poor graphics designer who
oh, you know, man,
already,
name on the back. Yeah.
Mom Taka. It's great.
So, but I mean, at the end of the day, what this really means to me is I'm happy. I'm looking forward to another sports game to play, sports game to talk about, sports game to perhaps drive, you know, more innovation. It doesn't need to be fantastic if it is wonderful, but even if it's just a game that comes out, you know, people are going to be talking about it. They're going to be excited about it. They're going to hear what we have to think about it. They're going to tell us what they think about it. I really hope that it is on next generation consoles, because while many people still play their PS3 and 360, I still do, as a matter of fact, but not for sports games. I think the vast majority of us who are really big into sports games have well now gotten into the next generation. So my biggest hope for this game is that it is a PlayStation 4, Xbox One game. It really was.